This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Thanks to everybody for being here, even though I know so many people are still dealing with disasters of their own. So let's take a listen. Yeah, what you're hearing are the sounds of Louis Armstrong, jazz legend, national treasure, and native son of New Orleans. When Hurricane Ida made landfall on Sunday, it wiped away part of Armstrong's New Orleans history.
Historical significance behind this building that is no longer there, as this is the Karnofsky Music Store. This music store, we know, is affiliated with Louis Armstrong.
The Karnofsky Building is where Armstrong worked as a child for the Karnofsky family. They were the ones to encourage him to pursue music. And while we can never predict exactly what weather events will take from us, we can try to prepare. And in this instance, New Orleans was not prepared to lose the Karnofsky Building. I wanted to get a sense of how big a loss this was by talking with another native son of New Orleans, actor Wendell Pierce. Now, you probably know Pierce from Jack Ryan, or maybe his iconic Bunk Moreland role in The Wire. But if you're from New Orleans, what you truly remember is Wendell Pierce as Antoine Baptiste in HBO's Tremé.
Bruh, you'd have taken Jefferson Highway to Magazine to get into town like I told you. It would have been cheaper.
You're killing me, dog. 28 on the meat.
I'm good for it, man. Just pick me up at 2 right here, baby. Take me home.
What I didn't expect to hear was how harrowing the experience of getting his own father, who's 96 years old, to safety during Ida was. Pierce had to watch the storm unfold from an ocean away due to his work.
I am in Athens, Greece right now working, shooting Jack Ryan. Saw the storm coming. We saw how urgent it was to evacuate. I didn't want to take any chances. My father was 80 during Katrina, and he's 96 now.
Wow.
He's at home still. We rebuilt the home that we rebuilt after Katrina, and he's under 24-hour care. So I coordinated 2 caretakers to go with him in his wheelchair accessible van and a follow car. And one of the caretakers, I said, bring your family, her husband and 3 children. And they started the trek to Houston. It took them 12 and a half hours. We had a medical emergency with one of the children on that Friday. I called ahead and said, we're going to be delayed because they have to have a medical procedure. We'll get there Saturday morning. Got there Saturday night. That's how long it took.
Yeah.
When they arrived, their rooms were given away. It's now 1 o'clock in the morning. I asked to speak to the night manager or the night auditor, whatever his position is. I was on a speakerphone, and he said he refused to speak to me. I said, I coordinated this entire trip. I've paid for this entire trip. How can you give the rooms away? And they gave the rooms away. So now I'm stuck. You know, we're in Houston. There's no rooms because everybody from New Orleans has evacuated there. My father has been in his wheelchair on the road for 12 and a half hours. I know I have to really take care of his health because it's fragile. We then immediately start getting on the phones, trying to find some place to stay. And that night clerk then said, get out. You can't stay here, to my caretakers. And I said, we are trying to get rooms. You gave our rooms away. We called. He said, if you don't leave this lobby, I'm going to call security. And I was furious. So I told my caretakers, we were all getting a little upset then. I said, no, stay calm. Go outside. He said he wants us to leave. And we still have to find rooms. So then they went outside in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. There my father strapped into his wheelchair accessible van. The 3 kids are sleeping in the backseat of the other car. We're all on the telephones trying to find rooms in the middle of the night. It's now around 2 a.m. He then comes out and says, if you don't leave the parking lot, I'm going to call the police and have your vehicles towed. At this point, I'm furious. But I know the one thing I have to do is get my father somewhere so he can rest, so his health won't be endangered. I've been living all year in the Four Seasons in Budapest. I called them, literally, on the other side of the earth. They said, contact our hotel in Houston. We have one there. contacted them. They gave us three rooms almost immediately. I said, leave that parking lot now. And I saw a wonderful story this morning of how this World War II veteran was saved in St. John Parish and how he was treated and taken out and the flag was given to him and all of that. And I thought about my father, how he was treated, another World War II veteran, as he arrived at 2 a.m. in Houston, like Mary and Joseph, there's no room in the inn. Forget you. And not only that, I will threaten you by calling authorities on you and now threaten you to get off my property.
You know, part of what's happened here is because the levees held, because there aren't spectacular images to show of our family members and our neighbors and our friends on the roofs of their home awaiting rescue, folks might think that, oh, well, all you had to do was evacuate. Like, how hard is that? And I feel like your story was such an important reminder that that question of just evacuate, just go, it's not that simple. And you're in a circumstance where you have resources. You're Wendell Pierce. You can make that phone call.
Yeah. You know, I thought about that. You know, I said, you know, and people attacked me on social media saying, you know, who are you to call out some night clerk? And I'm like, it doesn't matter who I am. It's how people are treated. And I was only thinking about all the people that were treated that way that didn't have the resources. How many people didn't have the platform that I have on social media to expose the way that's probably how difficult the evacuation could be for so many people. 12.5 hours on the road and to be greeted like that. But then just to have the difficulty of finding rooms and having the resources to now be in those rooms and going, are we going to stay for 2 days or 2 weeks or now 2 months?
Which, of course, in so many ways brings us back to the experience 16 years ago. And particularly, you know, I think, as I was realizing that your father was trying to get into a hotel in Houston, and we remember how so many people who were fleeing Katrina, who went to Houston, also did not find a warm welcome from the public policy there. Can you talk to us a little bit about the work that you've really been doing over the past 16 years? Maybe start with Pontchartrain Park.
I grew up in a wonderful neighborhood of Pontchartrain Park, which grew out of the civil rights movement. It was something ugly, actually, separate but equal, as we turned something ugly into something beautiful, and it became an incubator for Black talent. But it was a neighborhood that was very important to the evolution of New Orleans and the civil rights movement. And it was totally destroyed during Katrina. And I put out a call to action to my generation, the Joshua generation, who have gone out in the world and become successful men and women, to come back and reestablish the neighborhood. And that's what we did. We rebuilt the neighborhood brick by brick, block by block, house by house. We reconstituted the Pontchartrain Park Neighborhood Association. Major League Baseball came to the community and rebuilt Barrow Stadium and made it an urban youth academy for their training program. Southern University at New Orleans has returned, and we put together our own development and did 40 homes. So leaving at this time, we were a little anxious to see that all the work that has been done over the 16 years would hold. And so far, so good when it comes to the levees.
So not everything survived, Ida. Do you want to talk a little bit about the destruction of this legendary jazz landmark?
You know, for years, we've been advocating, cultural leaders in New Orleans have been advocating for the city to really honor our iconic landmarks and iconic figures being the birthplace of jazz. Actually, jazz is a national park. Literally, the art form is a national park, just like the Grand Canyon. And most people in New Orleans don't even know that. And one of the landmarks was on the most famous block of jazz, where the creation of jazz, literally, you can stand on its mark. And that was the Karnofsky Grocery Store and Pawn Shop. Forgive the pronunciation, but the family was caretakers and employers of a little jazz icon and protege by the name of Louis Armstrong. It was where he worked. Next to that shop is hopefully, when I go back, it's still there, is the Eagle Saloon. And at the Eagle Saloon, the real founders of the music, the inventors of jazz, Jelly Roll Morton, Kid Ory, Buddy Bolden, they all played there. On the other side of that pawn shop and down that street, a couple of addresses, is the Iroquois Theater, where when the music then started to be popularized, people really wanted to see it. It became one of the music halls at the very beginning of the onset of this great American iconic art form of jazz. And those three buildings are on the National Register of Historic Places. And I'm 58 years old in December, and they have never been renovated and never been restored and never held up to the level that they deserve. And one of them was lost in Ida. And I hope that this is a lesson that we'd learn as New Orleanians, as the leadership goes back, as cultural bearers, we must demand that these places be restored, be held up. They're on the National Register of Historic Places. They're the only reason they haven't been torn down. It's because they're protected by that designation. But yet we have procrastinated and been apathetic about these icons. So we wonder if it's if that indifference is going to continue on. And it just broke my heart when I saw the images of it gone. And when you see that image, there was the one sort of nod to the historic nature of that plot of land was a mural of the only photograph of Buddy Bolden in the early band. Hmm. Once in New Orleans, the saying said, right next to it, it was a beautiful mural. It was actually hopeful that they might even actually restore the buildings that it was honoring next to them. And now the images, that mural is destroyed too. It went down with the building and it's gone, it's decayed, it's crumbled. But yet there's still the saying next to it, once in New Orleans. The irony of that and the irony of that image should shake us to our core and realize that we have to bring back and honor the people that created this great, great American art form, jazz.
I so appreciate the trip that you're taking us on here, because I think, I mean, one of the great anxieties after Katrina was the concern that New Orleans would become the Disney version of New Orleans rather than the version that is true, that is out of the neighborhoods, right? Not just the French right. Quarter, not just the tourist spots, right? But the neighborhoods, right. The communities, where the music actually came from. Can you talk about Legacy Radio Station, WBOK, 1230 AM? I know you're one of the new owners there, and certainly investing in WBOK is definitely about a landmark of a different kind.
Yeah, WBOK is a legacy station, 70 years old. You know, it kind of gives a platform to those people that you were talking about, the real grassroots culture bearers. And they are the ones who sometimes never get an opportunity to speak their mind. And that's what WBOK does. It gives them a platform to go out there and speak their mind. And can you imagine this station being on air, you know, 70 years ago when people were saying there's a fish fry on Friday night at such and such a church, and you know Martin Luther King is going to be with Professor Dent at Dillard on Sunday. You know, it's that sort of thing that that I saw the radio station was being sold and came together with the group of investors to say, we can't let this station and a platform that is given to so many people in the community, an African American community specifically, go away. We have to give voice to the voiceless, and it's that same sort of attention that I hope we bring focus to and light to when it comes to our jazz landmarks and icons. A lot of them are in poor Black neighborhoods. You go to Central City in New Orleans, you know, that's where Buddy Bolden grew up and that's where Jelly Roll Morton was. And you understand the pathology of them walking right down the street to where that iconic Karnofsky grocery store fell, and where the Iroquois Theater was, and where the Eagle Saloon was. And so giving voice to the voiceless, it all ties together. As I advocate for the people in the communities, as they're coming back on WBOK, 1230 AM, New Orleans, what New Orleans is talking about.
And I love WBOK.
And also, you know, those are the same sort of people that created the music. You know, Jelly Roll Morton You can go to where he lived in Central City and see there's a bar on every corner and a church on every other, right? So you saw that there's Saturday night and then a Sunday morning. It's all in one block, and you realize what were all the variables that made up the music and the sort of democratic nature of what jazz is all about, that you can be free and the freedom of an individual, but still honor form or law or structure. And that's the core changes. I mean, that's what jazz is. It is the manifestation of the American aesthetic. Freedom of the individual when he plays an improvised solo, and at the same time honoring structure, the structure of the song and the music. And also it's emblematic of America, what we want America to be, a nation of laws, that at the same time you have your freedom within that, that the two can coexist. And that is the American aesthetic, and that is the aesthetic of what jazz is, and that is what our contribution to the cultural discussion of the world is. And that's why people come from around the world as jazz pilgrims, to see that culture. And we should honor that by having those landmarks restored and giving voice to the voiceless, because they were the voiceless at the time. And that's what WBOK is all about. So I am working here in Athens, Greece, and for another 10 days. I can't wait to get back home and begin rebuilding and recovering from this storm. And so I am a man of a multifaceted man, you know, of great multiple interests, and a man hopefully of Renaissance. I'm an artist, and see, that's the forum that I like to make the most impact, because while laws change behavior, thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that, art can change people's hearts and minds. What thoughts are to the individual when you reflect on who you've been and who you hope to be as you lie awake at night, the forum of the artist is where we collectively come together and we decide on where we've been, where we hope to go. We decide on what our values are and then go out and act on them. So that's the forum where I like to play, where we collectively come together, decide what's important to us, what our values are, and then go out and act on them.
I have one last question for you, because anybody who can do an extended metaphor on American democracy and jazz, who makes reference to the Joshua generation, who can tell me about the investment work around housing and economic development in Pontchartrain Park. You running for office?
No, I'm not. But, you know, people always ask me that. I said, I'd rather be the kingmaker than the king. I find that, you know, it is a government of, for, and by the people. And I'm one of the people. So I always tell people, always assume that you are in office. You are the people. You are the government. So what you want to see, you know, make it happen. You know, create the world that you want to see. Create the community that you want to see. You know, and that's the thing that you see in times like this, people reaching out in times of need, like Ida. And you realize that we have more in common than we have differences, and that we should utilize that.
Wendell Pierce, thank you so much for joining The Takeaway today.
Thank you.